Welcome to another installment of the Elution Exchange podcast. Today I'm joined by a beautiful members of product management, and we're talking about the limited resources that they have, particularly budget. But before we go into any more detail, let's do a round of introductions. Trevor, would you like to kick us off?
Sure. My name's Trevor. I'm a product manager at Stepler Health App, mobile health app. Previously, I was in project management, and before that, in QA.
Fabulous. Thank you. Gustav, we'll come to you next.
Thank you. My name is Gustav Wallström. I'm working at Levels at the moment. My background is a little bit more on the kind of design conceptual parts at the moment. I'm a product manager at Levels. I've been working there for 2 years. Before that, I've been working at Doberman for 12 years, and then I've been in UK for 3 years as well. So together, everything, I think I've been working 18 years as a product or project manager, and now lately as product manager.
Hey, very nice. Good to see you came back to Sweden and got out of the UK. And Christopher, come on up to you.
Thank you. I'm currently head of product at Slape, which is a veterinary AI company. And before that, I worked at Voi as a product manager, and been spending the last 15 or so years in various kind of product-y roles in startups and scale-ups.
Okay, fabulous, fabulous.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, a Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Now, we're all here, we're all product managers, except me, but we're all here to talk about product management, and especially at the moment in time, limited funding is a big issue. We've seen a bit of a tech recession slash depression, and we're all in at the moment. So we thought we'll go into the nitty gritty and try and understand, as product managers, how do we get around certain things and how do we overcome it as product managers. So I know each of you came with me with different couple of questions we want to go into. But Christopher, we'll start off with you, and you're talking about when funds are scarce, focus tends to move towards just getting something out at the expense of insight and exploration. Explorations from the organization comes to cancel activities like problem discovery and solution, and avoiding talking to customers. Should you cave in and skip this type of work? If not, how do you execute it on a shoestring budget, and how do you convince the organization that it will be still worthwhile? Plenty question. I like it. Let's go into detail.
Oh, wow. What can I add in terms of details? I mean, I guess it's a question that is like challenging in a healthy financial environment, but all like it gets even more challenging on the low turn. Just how do you make sure that what you do is like good work or quality work? And I think it's also very important to empower your team to be able to solve the problems that you kind of own this problem description. So that's why I think it's curious. And how can you do that? How can you get that knowledge without expending a lot on it?
Yeah, I think like one thing that's important there is like remembering that all of these kind of practices and ways of working, they are just tools at the end of the day. Like there are many different ways for us to achieve the same thing and to make sure that we are delivering something of value. And there can also be like the flip side of this, where when there is a little bit of extra time, extra budget that maybe we spend or we put a little bit too much focus on discovery and research and thinking that that will solve all of our problems. And then when we finally end up delivering, we didn't end up delivering anyways. So I think that's also like an important thing here that these are just tools at the end of the day, but of course, when they are needed, we need to kind of as product managers step in and be the champion for that. Mm. And I mean, we all have experience, so usually you can draw from some previous experience where this usually went wrong when we didn't have it. And that's usually the best way I find like to kind of convince other people that this is going to be valuable is mentioning a time when maybe you skipped this and talking about the consequences there.
Mm. I also think like on your, if you're on a in a budget. So I also think like the insights is super important. Like if you're, at least when you're scoping it, I think you need to validate some of the to make sure that you're on the right track. So I wouldn't skip it. Maybe I would ask a friend or someone, like, you don't need to make a big thing out of it, but maybe talk to three people and then you have at least and people that you trust and maybe can be critical, then you have, have a good case. But also, I mean, there are also services that can help out with recruiting and doing actually the booking of it. So you can spend time in that. Maybe it costs a little bit, but that's definitely the option, I think, as well, in order to save time, because it takes a lot of time. I'm actually working with one of my partners, PeepaFrog. They're providing that kind of service.
Who are they? You want to plug them?
I mean, PeepaFrog, they can supply both. They can supply moderated tests for in Sweden. And actually, they're looking at providing that service also for a global part.
Mm.
And we're also looking at doing a unmoderated service as well.
Okay.
So you can do that and set up it very quickly. That means like you can run tests and get feedback very quick.
Mm.
But still, of course, it's a budget, but it's pretty tiny budget and you don't need to do the booking, calling people, finding around. You can do that. So.
Yeah.
So that's exciting, but I think if you don't have the money for it, I think I definitely would have used at least someone to verify, a client or someone, so you call up.
Yeah, I think now there are like so many resources available, like in different capacities, whether it's like searching online for existing customer feedback for similar products. Like the reality of mobile apps, at least, is like usually we're not completely reinventing. Usually we're going off of some existing, maybe not template, but someone has solved the problem in a similar way, whatever the problem was. And a lot of ways, like, you can kind of borrow from similar products or similar industries to kind of fast forward past if you have zero budget, because I think there's a big difference between zero budget, small budget, and smaller budget, right? And of course it always comes from the context of what you did before. Because I think, like, I've definitely had experience where a large company has wanted to maybe build a new mobile app. And so their idea of a small budget was the biggest budget I'd worked with, right? And I think, but then their expectations are going to be much different in terms of like what they're going to discover when they spend this budget.
Yeah, I think it's like, maybe we've all been there at some point, like coming back from some product management conference or something like that with like starry eyes and like, I'm going to do this proper, at least I've done this, like the proper research led the way, like down to the bones, use all the tools and methods in the right way. And then, I mean, that tends to kind of burn your ability to do any more discovery work in that organization, maybe like long after you leave. That's, I think, a lot of us has been there. I don't know, have you had that experience?
Not so much. Like, to be honest, I'm going through like my first real on my own leading a product discovery and like user interview phase right now. And a big part of that is trying to manage the expectations with the stakeholder and like what that's going to achieve.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to solve that many problems on its own.
Right?
It's going to set us up for solving problems in the future. But that's the big thing, is like we are dedicating some amount of budget, whether that's like people's time or like actually spending. So we have an incentive for people to be a part of this program. And that's a big thing, like making sure that we're all aware of why we are doing this and that this is not going to be something that we're just going to listen to a few customers and then set our roadmap based on it. But that there are like steps to this, and it's not just one stone to fix all the problems straight away. What about you guys? Have you had specific experience with something like this as well? Like,
one thing I've been like kind of noticed also is that I think it's always hard to get either time or like cash budget to spend on this kind of thing. And I think one thing I realized is that I think it's sensitive also, because if you start to be the one who is doing this research, you also start to be taking control over the problem formulation, or like it's framing the work that the company is doing. And there's a lot of people within the organization that wants to have that power. I mean, it's fun, it's engaging, it's my ideas, like you want to be that person. And also maybe from your perspective, what you want to accomplish in your role, the product is very important. At least you work in a product-driven company, that many of us do. So like what I'm trying to do now with Sleep is that I'm trying to, rather than trying to take control over that narrative, try to perforate the organization with more product knowledge by teaching salespeople not to just be salespeople, but also do a little bit of qualitative research, like how to ask an open-end question and not convince the customers that what they already have is right. Building up data or business intelligence tools and make sure that they are available to the rest of the organization. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other sharing knowledge. And just
that's very smart. You use the sales team to gather insights for your product development. Mm-hmm.
But it's hard also because they have their goals and are very focused.
Maybe you find one part of that is like as you ask like around how you get buy-in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you see that helps a lot with the buy-in, because I think the closer someone can be to the thing that they're paying for or whatever, the little bit more comfortable they are. And especially if they know how they're going to use the results. So if you've already kind of taught them a little bit how to think this way, maybe they understand a bit more what they're getting into.
Yeah.
And I'm curious also, like, another part of your question about like just getting something out, right?
Yeah.
Especially in less product-led scenarios, we talk a lot about like MVPs. And just getting something out. And I'm really curious, like, your guys' perspective on the value of that versus spending more time making sure that you have validated, and maybe experiences you've had with that as well.
I've done a few projects like that, and I think it's very interesting. It also depends, of course, the concept you're doing. But I think the earlier you can do things and release it and test it, I'm all for it, because otherwise you start up ending up eating up a lot of budgets and resources just to getting the first step. And it can also show that it wasn't a success, and then you have burned out. So easier you can fail, or quicker you can fail, the better it is for everyone, I think. So I'm all for that.
Yeah.
It's
a good thing as well, right? Because you kind of need that safety to fail in various ways,
and also maybe say we can fake it and fake like everything you do behind the scenes is manual, but it looks automated. And that's okay if you want to prove a point. If it's a success, that's perfect, then you can use your money to make that automated. So
exactly. I think I like that the small startups where I spend most of my time, that you have to get something out or that option, or you're definitely going to fail, and then it's going to allow you to take bigger risks and maybe tackle the big important questions earlier that are much more comfortable to steer away from. There's minimum amount to put into building a product for it to be worthwhile. You need a little bit of design, you need a little bit of engineering, you need a little bit of, obviously, if you don't do enough of it, it is no use either. So maybe you need to take bigger bets, I mean, at least like big enough bets if you have less resources.
I guess there's also a risk there. Like, one thing I sometimes see is when we work with, maybe previously I was working with usually customers who are quite new to the space, maybe not technical, never built products like this before. And I find there that it's hard to explain why an MVP needs to be iterated on after it succeeds, right? Mm. Because you have an MVP that solves a problem at the minimum viable whatever, and trying to then convince that you need to go back in and improve on it becomes a lot harder when they're not used to that sort of thing, and trying to maybe explain the concept of tech debt right becomes a bit trickier there as well.
Yeah, but that you take after you go and break even.
Yeah, exactly.
Build it up. And
no, but you're totally right. Yeah. I mean, like, we need to pay the bills. That's obviously number one, so that we can keep solving the problems.
Yeah,
but at some point you will need to come back to it. And it's,
for sure. Sure.
Awesome. Did the debate answer your question?
I think it's one of those eternal moments, but I feel got a good lot of good thoughts there.
Okay. Fabulous. Well, Trevor, we'll come to your question. Another lovely, worthy question, but when working in product-driven environments, judging the budgets of a project can become more difficult, and therefore judging overall budget. How can we avoid risk in this context, and how do we communicate budget and check in on progress when we don't talk dollars or SEC in this particular matter? What can we learn from the more defined budgeting in consulting environments, for example?
Yes, lots of words, but it's a very personal question from my own personal experience. Switching from a product company where I had a technical role to a consulting company where I had a project management role, and now back to a product company where I have a product role. I've kind of seen lots of different sides of it. And, you know, I've kind of gone from the side of really, to be honest, not caring about the budget at all. As a quality assurance person, like, you know, really that's your job, is to care about quality first and other stuff next. And then switching to a scenario where we are talking about money every single day, it was much easier for me to say, okay, we're on track, we're off track. Mm-hmm. And then now back into the product where it's tricky to necessarily know, okay, are we going to hit our goals if we don't necessarily know how to measure them in a strong way? So I'm curious from you guys what your experience is with these different worlds and how we balance it.
Oh, it's a tough question, I would say. Directly when you ask the question, I also think about, I mean, I would convert it to hours, of course, and then get some rough estimates, and then maybe doing those rough estimates and plan for it. But we know we'll never succeed anyway. Exactly. But that's the way you measure it, at least, and then you can see kind of where you are. But it's a tough question.
Yeah, because there's the measurement aspect where we can measure how much time we spend on something. But I think it's also like the planning of the budget, right? Because when we have a set amount of money, we know that's all we have. But here, in theory, we have quite a long runway. But we kind of need to figure out how to use what for what.
Mm. But is this something you feel you need, or is it something that's expected, or is some other parts of the organization are asking for?
Yeah, it's maybe not usually a product manager's role, but I think in the scenarios that I find myself in, we do have a limited budget, right? Because we have so many hours we can work with at a given time. Mm-hmm. And I guess part of the question is similar to how you evaluate different ideas and how you figure out what's going to give you the impact you need now and use up this portion of the budget, right? Mm-hmm. Versus something that might take more budget and deliver more value. How to balance those things?
Yeah, I don't know. In some companies I worked, my other leaders of the company has been very fond of like business cases and that kind of stuff and calculating them. I always found them really stupid, because there's like a probability, like if you want to set like a even 80% like confidence in some range on like, okay, what this conversion rate on this upsell feature, it's going to be between, I don't know, 1% and 3%, especially in startup where you don't have that much data, like 1% and 3%. Okay, then either this is absolutely worthless or it's super, super, super valuable. And almost everything you're going to look at is going to be in that range of unicorn go broke scale. And then I guess if it doesn't fall in that range, then sure, then you can chuck it out. But I'm very fortunate now to have a company that believes in priorities over budget, and also that we will learn from what we do, and we change, and we don't know so much about the future. So we try to not have deadlines. We manage to not have deadlines a lot, and prioritize through prioritization instead. And
so how does that look like? It ends up being a little bit similar, right? Because you have lots of things you could do.
Yeah.
And you have to decide what to do first. How does that kind of look for you then?
Yeah, that's still something we're figuring out, I guess. But I it's a lot of conversation for us. We don't have a fixed grid, but try to represent the aspects of our organization that know best about their customers. So it's product and sales and customer support and then CEO for strategic. And we talk around the initiatives that we could launch and prioritize it, against that quite frequently, and try to keep that conversation going, not so much trying to quantify everything and it's been quite successful, I think. It's funny for a very data-driven company with a lot of PhDs, statistics, AI, biomechanics, that we really believe in the conversation and knowledge and understanding much more than companies that's been more business driven that I've worked in before.
I also think like maybe it's a different approach, but I mean, you usually talk about, you have the tech team that has a depth that you need to improve things. You have business, you need to improve the business parts, and then you also have the clients that wants new features. I usually think about it being that, you mean, of course, everyone needs to be happy. So, I mean, and also usually look at also like bottlenecks, like what are the main pain points we have? what do we need to solve? And when those are gone, that's a happy land. And then you can add maybe more things that will improve experience and also make maybe the client more delightful. But I think usually, like, if you have bottlenecks for business side, you need to solve them and prioritize that. And, like, of course, if it's tech, then you have to do that, but also make everyone happy. So maybe you could focus on one area to get the business part done first, and then you can do the product, and then you can detect depth. I mean, so you just do a little bit of themes there, so you can divide it that way. So we get the progress, but also can get more insights from that. So
I'm curious, like, when you mentioned clients, right, that's kind of like a big word in our industry as well. Like, it's like clients come with baggage and like wants and needs. How do you kind of manage that between, like, I don't know, the clients you have, like, but your own knowledge and your own experience versus like the client's opinion?
Yes, tricky one. I mean, I think usually it's if you have experience of something, so some developments, of course you can read between the lines. You can think about this, what this client says is something that I heard before, or yeah, this is line you need in terms of the business side. I mean, it's I think it comes down personally for experience, but otherwise it's also, you can also use the sales team to validate that and say, okay, this client says this, what have you heard, can you have a look, it looks interesting, can we get some more insights on it?
I think the clients usually know their problems better than you do, but so, like, as long as you understand their problems well and not just go with the solution that they come with, I think, because often the solutions that they come with, or sometimes they might not solve the problem that they want, or you can solve it
another way.
But I think that's but if you believe that you know the problems better than the clients, I think you're out on thin ice as well.
Does this answer your question, John?
Yeah, I think so. I think similar to yours, I think it's an eternal question about how to manage these things. But really great to get you guys' perspective.
All right. Awesome. Well, Gustav, we'll come to you. I know your question is a bit of two halves, really. One's talking about efficiency and the resources, and the other's the good old red flags. And we'll start with the efficiency and the resources question. So to ensure self-sufficiency and efficiency within a limited time and budget, key items do you require from stakeholders or project sponsors? How do they best support your efforts during the constrained timelines and resources? Another wordy word.
Thank you, GPT. Yes, but I mean, it comes down to what are the key inputs you need in order to drive your project successful from stakeholders, basically.
I think, Christopher, as you were saying, the shared vision of the problem is so key here. Like, I really think it's very easy, or the biggest risk we have is building in the wrong direction, right? And I think that everyone is not on the exact same page about what the problem is and where we're going to try and get to, then we just don't have self-sufficiency. And I think, obviously, that becomes a much bigger problem when time and budget is limited. So for me, like, it's really about front loading the work and like spending more time in meetings, talking, sitting down at tables and like arguing about things, rather than just trying to, it's a little bit of the flip side of the first question we had. I think you do need to kind of front load this stuff a little and do the extra discovery to make sure that when you do start, the risk is much lower.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this was a question, but what I like started thinking about when I read it, at least, was that it's a lot about trust. We have all these frameworks or assets or commitments or promises, but at the end of the day, it's really like if the person, those stakeholders that you have, if they trust you, you're going to have a nice time. And if they don't, it's going to be like not a nice time. And that in the next step, then I think it's a lot to ensure that you understand their situation and the problems they have to solve, and that they know that you understand them and that you can articulate them in a way that makes sense for them. Well, I think then people usually, and that you care about them, I think then they will let you solve them in a way that works for you.
What about in terms of like check-ins or milestones while you're progressing? Like, do you see that it's very valuable to have frequent check-ins with stakeholders? Does it depend on the situation? Because I think I've had both. Like, I've had almost daily check-ins with a client, and I think sometimes those can go a little bit the other way, where you maybe don't have enough new stuff to discuss that they kind of quickly become skippable, or you don't check in often enough. And I've absolutely had a situation where we pretty much built an entire project and then had a invisible stakeholder come up at the end.
Oh.
And that just part of the project.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, where you find the balance there.
Mm. Weekly. I can see. I think a weekly is a kind of a good benchmark, because even if you don't have anything to say, people will have forgotten it if you don't repeat it on a weekly basis. So around that club, we're only 70 people now. So I'm like 17. So on our weekly stand-ups, I'm like, this is what we're doing. This looks exactly the same as last week, because sprints, we haven't delivered anything even, but just for repetition. And then maybe I have something interesting to say about something on that kind of roadmap. I think that when we started doing that, it helped a lot. Calming down the organization. And
I have tried also. I also tried the way of, we have a partner where we're making most of the work at the moment, but they need to be very involved. They have all the knowledge.
Mm.
And so what we've done, so we have a weekly meeting going through where we're at the moment, almost like a mini demo, but also like it's open to show what you've done, what your thoughts are, and they can respond to it. So we have a collaboration there. And then we have the demo that's, I think they were set every third week or something, that after the demo, I'm not part of the project anymore, but then we recommended to have more alignment with stakeholders or the business areas. So they're part of the demo, they see what we've done, but then also have a dialogue afterwards to talk about what can happen. Because, I mean, the project we're working on, that's also sculpting the future phases and the strategy for that. They need to be doing, so they have to be very involved with that process as well. And I don't know exactly how it ended up, because I'm not in that room at the moment, but at the moment the vibes are very impossible to be there. So, and the client wants to carry on. So I think they're doing some right stuff there as well. But yeah, that's every third week, but then you also have a team involved, so they can have the dialogue as well.
Yeah.
It depends on how it's set up. So.
Mm. Do you have I don't know how you split up your projects, but if you talk about roughly maybe a solution development phase and then a delivery development phase, and do you, if you talk about checking in with stakeholders, do you have this same, or where do you put the effort? Where are your stakeholders kind of keen on getting updates?
Yeah, I think I designed it very based on where we're at.
Mm.
Depends also, so who's working on it, and of course, so maybe it will be a solution or a conceptual phase that's set up in a different way than the production phase and all that. So yeah, but I guess it all comes down to communication and sharing information and getting aligned people. So
I think there's alignment between the stakeholders and the delivery team and the product team and whatever it is, but I think it's also an important part that's kind of outside of our realm, which is the alignment between stakeholders, right? I think this is something that's a huge risk, and it can be quite hard to identify sometimes. But I definitely have felt that in the past, where you maybe talk to some stakeholders more during the solution phase and some other stakeholders more during the more technical phase, because they feel more comfortable in that phase, and you might get different feedback from different stakeholders, and it's a hard thing to push for. But I think that's one of the biggest risks for a project where you kind of have external stakeholders.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, a kind of on the when you feel somebody's uncomfortable in a meeting, and you are this is going to be so much harder, we're not going to come to a decision, or we're not going to have a good creative environment if this person is involved in this conversation, that's exactly the person that needs to be there also. Exactly. And it's just, I don't know, I keep doing that mistake over and over again, I can't deal with this person right now, and then I just ignore them, and then you have to eat it.
But I think, I guess later, probably because we've also, maybe at least I have been that stakeholder within my own organization, especially when I had a more quality focused view, it's important to be that kind of annoying stakeholder who is always asking for the same stuff and asking, reminding people of the same things. Because if that's coming up over and over again, there's a reason, and maybe we do need more alignment.
Mm. Yeah.
Awesome. Does that answer your question, Gustav?
Yes.
That's good. Now we'll go to the second part, which is talking about red flags for new product managers. And the question was, for a product manager who's new to the role and is taking over a project, what red flags should they be vigilant about? What specific warning signs and common pitfalls that you should watch in order to navigate the project successfully? How do you mean?
Basically, like my thought was here, like if you have a friend that's starting up as a product manager or project manager, and they're pretty, they're a little bit new to the job, there's also like there are things that you can watch out for, and I think maybe it's good to like bring them up, and also it's good to remind yourself, because sometimes you're in the wheel and then you don't really think about it, but it's always good to be a little bit extra careful with red flags, because if you don't take care of them in the early stage, they become like this big mess, and then becomes a problem in the end, basically. So that was my main thought. It's a little bit of a treat.
Exactly. Okay, now what I thought about was, I think something I've seen many times is that people, if there is a serious, maybe like personal problem with somebody in or around the project, people tend to tell you, but not really tell you. I think that's like they're like if some name comes up about, oh yeah, that is that person, but and then they kind of go over a different topic, and you hear that from multiple people, then that, I think that's really something you need to zero in on and understand what's going on around this person. Why is everybody talking about the person without talking about them? Because it's usually, I think
with like product managers, I googled the job before I started in product management. The first thing you read, right, is like CEO of the product, right? That is a great definition, but everyone reads that very differently because they don't know what a CEO does, right? A lot of people think that that means that they are the king of the product, right? And that they should make every single decision and that everyone should listen to what they say. But the role of the CEO is to listen to different inputs and make executive decisions when it's needed, right? And I think there's that side where they want to decide everything and be in charge of everything. Or there's the flip side, which I find maybe more comes from people who are more used to project management, which is a little bit of like wanting to get the stakeholders to make the decisions, and then you carry those decisions through, even if you don't agree with them. So that in the end, when something goes wrong, they can kind of put their hands up and go, well, I told you this wasn't going to work. It's not my fault. And I think you can kind of identify that quite early on, where people easily give up on their own opinions and convictions. Product people, for the most part, do have a lot of opinions. Like, we like product, we look at other products. And if someone puts up a little bit of an argument and then quickly drops it and said, like, oh, okay, we'll do it anyways, I think that's a huge red flag to me, where I know that person's going to come back later and say, oh, I thought that was a bad idea, but I didn't want to say anything because blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I don't know. It's a double-edged sword there for sure. Like, some amount of ownership is really important, but it shouldn't go too far.
Yeah.
But I also think like with that, more of a green flag maybe. But I really want to work with product managers from different backgrounds. Like, I really think there's not really like a school on product where like know these specific list of things and that is going to be a great product manager. Like, the product manager in our environments is going to be completely different, and like I come from a completely different background than both of you, I think, and I think that makes you a really good product manager for whatever you're needed for. And I think that's also a big danger you can have, is like just looking at resumes and seeing, okay, product manager for 6 years previously, therefore they will fit my organization as a product manager.
Different, we say different flavors, so product managers, we have that at the levels as well, so, and I really enjoy that. I think it's, but you also need to know what you're good at and what you're good at. Like, are you good to get the decision together, or like, or are you good at the tech parts? Or it's always good to know your strength. And of course, that's an area where you'll be good, but also maybe open up for other people to complement and do things on the area where you're not so good in.
I guess when you're recruiting for new PMs, it's a little bit easier, right? You can look at a resume, you can ask questions, but like, how do you approach that when you have a team of PMs and you need to kind of get this synergy? Like, how do you figure out who's good at what? Like, I don't know, I'm a product team of one, so right now I don't have that problem. I agree with myself all the time,
I think we're going for difference. So like, at least like when we're recruiting, we're talking about it, we want to have a little bit of different spread. So we have if we have a person that's really strong on the tech part, one that's really strong on design, maybe we need one that's good at growth, maybe. I mean, we're trying to get it really broad, because then you can go to that person and say, hey, I need help with this. What's your thoughts on that? And then you can help each other.
I think you're really, it's really true that the product manager can be a little bit anything, but I've been also thinking about that as kind of a challenge for the occupation. Like, it's a kind of there is no product management school, and when you hire a product manager, you don't really know what you're getting. And every start in a company doesn't have a product function, which is what I've been doing a lot of the time. You have to explain to the company what a product manager does, and that's what I think a product manager does. If I leave and somebody else starts, they have to start over. I guess this is true for maybe not so much engineering, but at least design as well. That, like, oh, design is not just painting pretty pictures, it's also all these other things around processes and co-creation and all that stuff. But I wonder if maybe in the future product management will be a little bit more defined. Like, this is what the product work is. Is it project management, or is it customer insight? And like, people agree around this, and maybe there are other roles that describe this other work that is kind of, I mean, totally different. Like, I worked with product managers who have a background from user research and don't know anything about engineering. Like, that's a completely different job than a product manager comes from development side, for example. Like, they do know completely different things, see the world in different ways. I mean, it's just hard in a way.
And I definitely, like, there is definitely lots of different competencies, lots of different flavors of product management. But I think also at the end of the day, like, you end up getting similar personalities, because I think it is a certain kind of person that wants to involve themselves and solve. For me, product management ends up being like problem solving, right? That's why I love it. Like, because I found, like, you can solve problems that matter. And I think that's a personality trait that, no matter what background you come from, the reason you end up in product management is for that reason, because they want to get a bit more hands-on. And I think I've at least not really encountered many product managers that do just want to, like, fill out documentation and follow instructions and stuff like that.
No. But it's also quite the engineering, like, answer to what the product manager does, like product problem solving.
Yeah.
I wonder if the user researcher product manager would say it's about that. Or business product managers I know, they're like, it's about, I don't know, something like growth or profits.
Yeah, we're talking about the role now. Yeah. And I realized it's not a red flag.
Oh.
It's super interesting. It's super interesting, though. But I also think... You mentioned a really, really interesting thing. I think that, like, if you hear a negative thing like three times or so, I think that's a cue for me as well. Like, if I hear something three times, I have to act on it, because otherwise I know it's going to be continuous. We need to follow it. It's almost like when you're at home and see things, oh, I need to clean that table or whatever it is. Like, if you think about it three times, I usually do it, because otherwise then I can get rid of that thought and I can continue.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's and it can be a good tip for anything basically that happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think for me, like, a more specific red flag in terms of product management is not knowing how we're going to follow up and measure something. I think that's like a really concrete one that people who maybe get the title of product manager but don't really understand the role, that's something that can really, for me, like, right away, that it's like, okay, they have ideas, right? Everyone has great ideas for apps or for products. Like, that's not the hard part. The hard part is knowing, is it going to solve the problem? And also, how do we prove that it solves the problem? Because like, we can talk to users and talk to our friends who are users, and they'll give us answers we want, or we can lead the user down a specific question so we get the answer we want. But at the end of the day, like, the data for the most part won't lie, and we do need some ways to, like, follow up specifically. And I think people who should not be product managers maybe will shy away from that because they don't know how to measure these things, and they don't really care about that side of it as much. They want it to be a bit more by feeling.
I
feel like I should be able to come up with so many red flags, but I forgot them all.
It's hard to talk about red flags, personal flashbacks.
We were talking about stakeholders and vision. I think it's very important to have a clear vision that you understand, that you can stand behind. And if you don't believe in it, and maybe the team won't believe in it. It's like, it's also, it can become like this thing that you're, no one's talking about it. An elephant in the room or whatever. I mean, it's like, if I think that's a very important thing. Like, you need to, if you're, you need to agree with that and understand it, and being able to talk to your teammates about it, and everyone are aligned.
I guess the tricky part is there is because we are not usually the biggest decision maker, is sometimes you won't fully agree with the thing, right? You might 90% agree, and you could push it until you get enough. But I think that's really important that, like, at the end of the day, the product manager can stand beside behind the thing. Like, you should get far enough into agreement that you can feel comfortable saying, yes, I will push the thing ahead. And then it's just got to be full on. Like, you just got to push that thing on and not have this kind of, yeah, I think this might work, but it's someone else's idea, like, whatever. And just have that kind of conviction so the team gets aligned.
Yeah. I think, like, if you listen, if you, like, you talked about also about listening to the team and letting them being a part, I think that's also super important to put, like, their perspective on things. They can highlight or spotlight things that you haven't thought about that actually is crucial for, maybe sometimes can be like at the business model or how to proceed. And I think it's super important to be open-minded listening to things, and that can be a red flag as well. And maybe you can bring it up, maybe not, like, info, you can bring it up with your stakeholder, like, or something like, you talked about this and what do you think about that. And
I think another one, kind of building back to my question, I guess, is like, if you consider going into a company as a product manager, trying to understand that product organization, like, maybe not just necessarily the product manager, but are the product organization responsible for building insights around the customers or not? Because if they are not, it's like, then you're more of a project manager. And if you want to be a product manager or be empowered in your work, then that's, like, then I think that's a good kind of measurement on that, and how much emphasis the organization puts on that in the role. If they don't think it's important, they don't, you should make decisions either, probably. And kind of on the other side of that, if you're new in the role and go into a company as, like, the first product manager or in a small organization that has have this organization, then you will probably be a project manager to a large degree, and it's going to be very hard for you to turn that around out for more experienced people. I think it's good to know.
Fabulous. Well, we'll leave it there then, chaps. We've debated quite a lot of different things in this, which was great, and I really appreciate it taking time out and going into this quite serious thing at the moment. Sometimes a lot of product managers are feeling the pinch, and it's good to know how they're navigating it. So thank you very much for jumping on the podcast. Catch you next time, guys.